Hi, my name is Sarah Tulloch, Talking Writing's podcast production manager, and this is the Talking Writing podcast. Please enjoy the episode.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us at the Talking Writing podcast. My name is Neva Talyaden, and I am the community manager of Talking Writing. And today I am joined by Gianna Hewer, who is a psychotherapist and a writer. And she's also my neighbor here in Rockaway Beach, New York. Gianna and Jason, her husband, owned the only bookstore, I believe, that opened up here in Rockaway Beach, New York. And we'll talk more about that later. But first, before we discuss the bookstore part, I want to discuss the writing part. So Gianna, why don't you tell us more about what genre you write and where you've been published? And, you know, what your plans are, what your further plans are as a writer.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Neva. I predominantly have been writing personal essays for about a little over a year at this point. I've been submitting to literary magazines with, again, mostly nonfiction, either creative nonfiction or personal essays. I actually do have two published fiction pieces. It was, you know, just a little fun thing from a class I took that, you know, used objects to talk about writing or your life. And I actually found it really fun to just do a little bit of fiction, but I think predominantly personal essay writer and / nonfiction. That's been sort of what started, I think, this journey, this part of my writing journey. I will say, I think I've been a writer my whole life. I, a couple of Christmases ago, found my first short story collection that I wrote in second grade. My favorite story from that one was about how E.T., the extraterrestrial, needed friends. And I invited him to my school so he could have more friends and I could introduce him to people.
It pains me that you have to explain what E.T. is, who E.T. is, because...
I think people might not know who E.T. is at this point.
That's right. It's like, hello, side note, E.T. used to be a very popular movie and Drew Barrymore was in it, right?
Yeah.
How old was she in that movie?
I think she was like 6, 8.
Yeah. Like, okay, if you want to see Drew Barrymore as a kid, watch E.T. the movie. And this is the basis for Gianna's short story. So E.T. was like, was he ostracized in school or what's going on?
So I think it's interesting because I've told the story to every person in my life, how much I was terrified of that movie. Like I saw it when I was like 7 or 8, I was so scared and I was like, I hated it. I hated that movie. And then I find this book and I'm like, well, apparently I loved E.T. I wanted him to be my friend and to have more friends because I felt, I guess in the movie, he seemed a little lonely, you know, Elliot was kind of his only friend. And I think now trying to understand my perspective as a child, I think I was like, oh, he needs help. He needs support, which I guess is probably part of the reason I became a therapist, right?
Now, I was going to say, now you're reading into it like a psychotherapist. It's like, that's going deep there, right?
But well, it's also though, it's a lot of what, you know, I've been thinking about why I've been writing in earnest for, I guess, I really started after the bookstore closed in June of 2022. My husband, Jason, and I went on our own made a DIY artist retreat, right? So we did both. He wanted to get back into doing his art. He's a graphic designer and fine artist. And I was like, I have something to write about now, my heartbreak over losing my bookstore. And over, I don't know, less than 2 months, I wrote 56,000 words. I thought it was a memoir, might be a novel, not really sure what it is at this point.
That still blows my mind.
But it just wanted to come out, right? And it's the first time in my life that's ever been the case. Okay. People have asked me to write with them, but I've been asked to contribute to things. I was an English major in college, so I have professors that, you know, are like, you're a good writer. Do you want to write this thing? But I've never sat down and wrote a story that felt like mine.
Okay. So I was going to say, okay, let's back up there for a little bit. There's two things that I want to give a backstory to. So one is that, you know how some writers begin by saying, oh, I never had an arts background. I wasn't really, I read, but I wasn't really exposed to the arts. And then I became a writer later on. You're like the opposite. You were so exposed to writing. You were an avid reader. I think you mentioned before that your mom, you know, as a professor, she was also like exposed you to these things. You're an English major. And as you said, you were invited to, you had a lot of chances to contribute and write. And then you never, it seemed like you never really took it seriously, or you were like, nah, I'm good. I just want to be an avid reader. In the background and whatever. So I was just gonna ask, like, aside from the bookstore, like the life event, right, about running a bookstore and then having to close it, what do you think was like the trigger, or like the shift? Was it the retreat with your husband, or what do you think?
I really felt like, I can't even count how many books I've read, and every genre. I love fiction, but I mean, I'll read anything really. Literally, I'll pick up anything and read it. I guess I just never felt like I really had a story to tell. And then it was like, I was so sad. Not that I haven't had other sad things happen in my life, but this was like visceral, right? Like it was like, I had one dream in my whole life, right? And it was to open a bookstore, cafe, and wine bar. And then it's like the first thing in my life, like looking back now, that I really put my whole heart in, like all the hard work, physical labor, right? Like hard work, and like let go a lot of ego, right? Like, you know, I'm a therapist in private practice. Like my clients knew I had a bookstore. They came to it because Rockaway is a popular place to come in the summer for the beach, right? Like I had to like let go of one whole identity and let another one in. And something about that made me more confident, made me grounded and seated in something where I was like, I don't even care what it sounds like. I need to write this, right? You know, writers talk about it all the time, right? Like it's like a need for some people. And I never felt that need. When someone said, oh, you want to like write a flash nonfiction piece for this book? I was like, yeah, sure, I could do that. Or, you know, a blog post about something having to do with psychology. Good. Yeah. My mom has hundreds of publications. We wrote a book together about psychology, right? And social justice. And like, but it was hers, right? I was a helper. I was a researcher. I was someone who wrote cases, but yeah, you know, you asked. Oh, sure, I'll do it. But this felt like, finally, I had the like urgency that I read so many writers talk about, you know?
I love that. And I remember the first piece I read of yours is in Fast Funny Women, the anthology, right? Yeah. And you and Jason were already running the bookstore. And may I say that Avoid the Day bookstore was like a sanctuary for so many people here in Rockaway, especially during the pandemic. Because that's, you opened at the cusp of the pandemic, right? And had to really put on your entrepreneurial hat and navigate through that. But it's interesting that in the middle of that too, I guess, would you say that because you were stretched as an entrepreneur, it kind of like stretched you as well as a creative person?
Yes. Yes. I think I've never thought about myself as a creative person. I didn't take one creative writing class in that whole English major. Like I do some stuff and it could be considered art sometimes, but like, I'm not a creative person. Like Jason's a creative person. You know, he's the artist of the family. He's the one, you know, that does these like great, beautiful murals and like he creates, right? But actually, I mean, the bookstore itself was a huge creative project, right? Like we picked out every single thing, and minus the electric and plumbing, did all the physical labor, right? We painted every single wall. We picked, you know, every wine glass and every book, literally every book that went on the shelf. So like, I think it just burst open this feeling of like, oh my God, you've always been creative. What are you talking about? Like every time you make a new recipe, another thing I share with my mom, right? Like she's been a writer and an academic her whole career, and she cooks all the time and she just creates her own recipes. And so do I, right? Like that's creative. There's so much to a creative life, but I will say, like, I think being in a marriage for almost 12 years with someone who has a strong sense of his creative identity helped me to be able to see, like, even my job as a therapist is incredibly creative. I'm basically doing improv, you know, for 45-minute sessions where I have to be right. I'm in it with them. Like I'm 100% present and aware, and you know, going where they need to go. And it, yes, I have a strong clinical background, but it's also using like, how does this relate to everything else you've told me about your life? And how it, interestingly, it's, I actually think a lot of it about therapy as narrative a lot of the time. Now, I mean, before I started writing again, I didn't, but now I'm like, wow, I am piecing together a narrative. So are they. And together we're trying to like change a lot of the time. I think people are coming to therapy to change, to make something that isn't working work better. And
now that you mention it, that's a really great insight, because you know how writing or art is about making meaning. And as I told you last time, I started therapy for the first time in my life late last year, and it was like mind-blowing. And I see now, having that perspective of being in a therapy session, what you're talking about having a narrative or recalling narratives, and those narratives having either more meaning or a different meaning that I didn't think about before.
Right. And learning through talking about it, right? When you're talking in a therapy session, you're hearing it too, in another perspective. And you know, the therapist's job is to ask the questions to help you to be able to see what you can't, right? Mm-hmm. And like, and oftentimes that's what now, at least with personal essay writing, that's what I'm doing for myself. I sit down and, you know, word vomit. Mm. And then in the editing process, which now includes like a writing group I joined and my husband and, you know, sometimes friends, actually I have a therapist friend who is also a writer. And so we exchange our work, and like through every edit, I see something new in my story that I've told myself so many times, you know, and that I've told my therapist a million times.
Right. It's like all of the things you said, I feel like demystifies a lot of things about writing. You know, that number one, like you, even if you write it yourself, you never really write alone. Like you have a group, a writing group. So yeah, tell us about when you first started writing. Obviously, like the pieces started coming out. How did you find your writer's group? Or was it first with your husband that you kind of like, hey, is this any good? Like, how did that start for you?
Okay. So after the, you know, total 56,000 word novel about the bookstore, I was like, okay, I'm done. I don't want to look at that ever again. So it's too painful. I don't want to see it. Okay. But I was like, I'm inspired now. Like, I want to write things. So I think I waited a few months, maybe like 6 months, and actually asked my like advisor mentor from college, who had asked me to write a piece for her series, her essay series, to like be my writing mentor. And she was like, I'm a full-time professor. So, I mean, I can't do that, but I appreciate it, but no, you know, I'm very busy. I'm like, okay. But she's like, actually what you should do is try to find a writing community. So I had never written a personal essay. I'd written these nonfiction like flash pieces. I actually took something from something that happened in Rockaway, right? A whale died on the beach.
I remember, yeah.
And I don't know if you remember this, but like a few weeks, maybe a couple weeks later, there was a big storm and there were pieces of the whale.
Blow. One big piece on 116th.
Right. Like, and I take since the pandemic began, I've been taking like a daily beach walk. I try to walk, you know, for an hour on the beach, just clear my head, whatever. Actually, it's been quite inspirational with writing, but I was walking through my beach walk and I stumble upon these pieces. And it was after the bookstore closed. I was having some feelings about my neighborhood and I was like, whale parts just everywhere. Went home, wrote this thing, shared it with Jason, and he was like, I mean, that's a lot. And like, he's like, could you use some editing? Let me help you, right? So I was like, okay. So this is the first piece I started submitting. And this is before I took a class, before I did anything. And yeah, I got rejected, like 8 times. And then the 9th time, someone wanted it. And I was like, what? Okay, this is great. And by that point, by the time it actually was accepted, I had started my first personal essay writing class. And from that first class is how my writing group was formed. So 4 people from that class wanted to be in a group, didn't have one, and we're still in it. And now it's been like 1 year and 4 months that we meet once a month on Zoom, and we just exchange pieces whenever any of us feel like we need another eye. Everybody contributes. It's one person working on like a memoir, one person's writes for her local newspaper, but also writes other things. One person is, I think, just doing this for fun, honestly. She has a whole nother career like me. And it was great. It just came together and actually worked, you know?
It's totally like a different kind of relationship. Like, you have your marriage, you have your close friends, your parents, your siblings, and then you have your writers group. I don't think I can, because I do also have writers group. And sometimes you can have more than one writers group for different kinds of, you know, needs. Maybe one is more genre specific. But how would you describe the dynamic from a therapist point of view? I don't know. You don't have to.
Yeah.
But like from that perspective, how would you describe the difference of having that kind of group? Like, kind of relationship is it, do you think?
It's so interesting, right? Because I actually do a lot of training as a group therapist. So I am part of groups, like therapy groups, and I'm part of this writing group, right? And actually, they're so similar, right? And it is because there is this distance between your real life and this other thing you're doing, right? Like in a therapy group, there's all these rules and if you violate them, it's a big deal. And like, it's contained. That's the point, right? It's a container where you really can feel safe talking about the most vulnerable things that you're thinking, feeling, experiencing in your life. And a writing group is almost the exact same thing. I don't really know anything much beyond what they've written about their personal lives. We don't really talk like we're friends. We don't have glasses of wine, right? Like we are there for a purpose to talk about edits, to talk about what we're working on, to get inspiration from one another, to share resources. And when we sign off, it's like, until next time, no one keeps in touch. It's so similar to a therapy process group. It's amazing.
That is actually amazing. And you, when you're describing it, it's like, yep, that's completely right. It's like, we don't have to be involved personally in their lives, but somehow you feel close to them in a certain way. Like, what is it? Is it there because the writing is a risky thing? You would think that you don't want to talk to other writers because it feels competitive, like a competitive field, right? It's like, oh, I don't want somebody getting my ideas or whatever. But I've never thought that way with my writer friends or anything like that, or my writing group. But what do you think it is that allows people to be vulnerable with a writing group? As you said, was like just like your therapy group, like you don't need to be personally involved outside of the session. But something about being in that group allows you to be vulnerable, even though, you know, writing is a competitive field as well. But somehow, you know, you allow yourself to be vulnerable in that group. Like, it feels like a safe space. How do you think that happens? It's like, is there like, what do you call this? Unspoken rules of engagement when you're in a group?
Definitely this group. We all were writing about similar things in this class. And I think we were attracted to one another to become a group because of that. And there was a lot of vulnerability in the writing, right? So it was like a lot about grief, a lot of, a lot of things actually connected to psychology and people's families and family dynamics, relationships. And I think in knowing that someone's so vulnerable sharing this work with you, even though you don't know anything outside of what they wrote, and in this case, it's all nonfiction, right? All of us are writing about our real lives. I think there's a respect that we all have for each other, not just the writing, but just for, this is a very personal story. And in that, it like allows us to be honestly like more human, right? Like I think sometimes we take our friends and our family for granted, right? We'll be like, oh, no, they get it. No, we're very careful with our words or our edits or our, and there's a lot of explanation. And I think we actually, because we met in a class where there were really great defined rules about how to edit one another's work, it really helped us to be able to have like a structure that actually works and doesn't create a lot of hurt feelings and upset. I mean, it's happened.
Right? I mean, there are toxic writers groups, and I have been in one, and of course, as a newcomer, and immediately you can see it immediately, and I left immediately, obviously, after the first thing. Good. But I understand completely what you're talking about, and I think that's why it's important to have a writers group. Well, first of all, too, maybe the people closest to you are not as into reading or writing, and so you can't really force them, right, to kind of be into it if they're not. But luckily for you, Jason, your husband, is a creative person and, you know, an avid reader, and so that comes in handy.
really he's so encouraging, and he enjoys reading like the work, right? Like he enjoys when I finish something and he's excited, right? Same way I'm excited to see like a book cover he's designed.
Yeah.
He's like, no, share it with me. Like, show me. Like, I mean, we had one incident where he was in a bit of a mood and I was like, will you read this for me? And he was extremely harsh. And then I sent him my writer's group rules of revising. And I was like, you gotta start with something nice. And he was like totally open to it. He's like, yeah, no. He's like, I actually also shouldn't read anything when I'm in a bad mood. So like it's good. It kind of even set up boundaries for us, right? That most, we share a lot. We share like this whole life together, and much of it is really creative and exciting and fun. But yeah, maybe we don't read each other's, or I don't look at his art and he doesn't read my writing when either one of us is, you know, cranky. Like we just, say, I'm cranky, not today.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not as if like you expect, you expect it every time, right? Like, do you let him read all of your work, or is there work that you have to like, nope, don't touch this?
Well, so there have been, all right. So I tried to actually do some math before I came on here. So I have been rejected 80 something times in the last, I don't know, 14 months. And I have had 8 acceptances, right? So these aren't great odds, but it's fine. I think
it's great because you keep, you know, that means you're submitting. You're actually writing and submitting.
And I think it also, I know it's funny. I forget who it is, but Jason has this like a quote, like this 10 rules of being an artist on our refrigerator. I don't know. I cannot remember who the artist is, but one of the biggest things is like rejection is a part of art. Like you are going to be rejected. You are going to have to accept this is a part. So it's so interesting because I was bullied in high school and I'm very scared of like talking in front of people, doing like performing in public normally. But for some reason, this at least the first year, the rejections didn't bother me that much. I was like, it'll find its home. It'll find its place in the world. Or sometimes after, you know, 7 rejections, I'm like, maybe it is time to revise that again, you know, even though it has had 4 or 5 edits already. And it's less, I guess I don't internalize it as a failing. And I used to, I don't know, if I felt like I had a bad session, like I was like, oh my God, you're a terrible therapist. I'm like, no, it was a bad moment. It was a bad day. And they might not even have experienced it that way. So I think 40, when I turned 40, really released something where I was like, it's okay. This is part of putting yourself out there, is that some people are not going to like what you write. And, you know, in terms of sharing with Jason, it's like, I had a piece published that was actually kind of like a love letter about our love of music that we share. And I didn't want him to read it before it was published. And I just had a feeling this one place fit really well with what they put out there. And then it was like right around Valentine's Day. So I was like, well, I have a Valentine's
Day. That's so sweet.
Yeah. And so I know. So there's some things I purposefully don't share. And I have a couple of things like out there waiting, pending to see if they'll be accepted, that are just about difficulties in marriage, right? And I had my writing group look at it, and I edited it in classes. But yeah, if it's published, I'll share it with him probably. But I didn't feel
probably,
like
right. Probably. There's still boundaries. There are still boundaries, especially when you're both creative. Your genre is nonfiction, personal essay, / nonfiction. So let's talk about the one piece of fiction that you wrote, and you wrote 53,000 words of it. Yeah. And you said it came from your experience of after running the Avoid the Day bookstore for several years, and then having to let it go, sadly, to the sadness of so many in the community as well. You took that experience and ran away with a fiction piece, which is surprising. So for the first part of the question is, how do you know whether something should be fiction or nonfiction? And then the second part is like, what was the motivation, or how did this piece come out of you?
Well, so I was like, it was her choice, right, to close. It just wasn't working financially. The pandemic had been, yeah, we opened 6 weeks before the pandemic started, so we didn't really have a shot at the knowing what it was like pre that or what it would be post that. And it just came down to a financial decision, because we did both keep our day jobs and try to juggle everything, and it wasn't working. So we, you know, even though it was our choice, it was like a devastating choice. We thought this was going to be like, we loved this community. We were like, we bought a house here. We plan to live here for the rest of our lives. This was like, it wasn't a retirement plan. I think we both enjoy our careers and wanted to have a hand in that and eventually hire staff and, you know, like be able to be, you know, a part of the community in this very specific way, right? So realizing that while we had many beautiful, loyal, wonderful customers just like you, that were great, and it didn't really seem like this was something this community could really support financially. Like, maybe it was a great idea and maybe people really liked the idea of having a bookstore, but you know, there had never been one before. Maybe that was an indicator that it couldn't this neighborhood can't yet sustain it. We met actually a woman who grew up here, and she was like, you're 25 years ahead of your time. I'm like, 25 more years, there's a bookstore, whatever. So as we were closing, right, she was like, it's okay. The neighborhood's not ready, right? Which is, you know, now it's been a couple of years and I can understand it could have been timing. It could have been so many things. I don't know. But at the time, I was very sad, but I was also very mad. And so I was like, what, you know, like, we built this beautiful thing and no one loved it as much as we did, and it was terrible and could have been so great. And so the fiction element, right, was that I took all this, our story of building something, but then sort of started introducing characters that don't really exist in our real life. And there was a little witchcraft, spiritual sort of element to the story. So suddenly it went from really starting out more as actually really a therapeutic exercise of like, I gotta get this out of me. Like, I'm so upset, I'm so mad. This will help me to deal with this and actually kind of understand it for myself. Like, why did we do this? What were we trying to get out of it? What didn't work? And turned into like, people are, you know, like dying in the neighborhood for weird reasons that have nothing to do with the pandemic. And like, do I have magic powers?
So is this a revenge story?
I mean, it was a little, like, it was just like, it was fun to write. It had never occurred to me, even though in therapy, right, it's such a normal practice to be like, you can think and feel whatever you want, right? Like, if you want to kill somebody, talk about it. If you want to kill yourself, talk about it, because you won't do it, right? Like, if you talk about it,
yes,
you talk
good through, point.
You are going to just get the feelings out. You are going to feel better. You're going to feel free, right? And it just is what it turned into. It went from straight memoir to like fantasy, speculative fiction. I don't, you know, and that's where I realized the fun of it, the fun of writing about this, you know, upsetting sort of sad thing that had happened was getting to kill people in a book, right? Getting to like, just sort of like an amalgamation of the people that had annoyed us the most or been like very odd and like, you know, difficult, that I could just, you know, they could die in strange ways, you know? And
well, I, for one, am going to be in line for when you have that book out. That is amazing, actually. So, you know, from what you're saying, it's more like the concept dictates the form or dictates the genre more than you inventing what the genre is first and then.
Yeah, I think so. I think like, because the turn it took, right? And it's so interesting because I up until this year, I'd only taken nonfiction classes. So I actually took a fiction editing class.
Nice.
Like, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, fiction is hard.
It's hard. I find it harder, to be honest.
It's so much harder. Like, when I actually like saw the building blocks and I was like, oh wow, like we need so much more character development and plot. And like, I mean, the plot, I guess the plot was there, but the character development, the like stakes, the like learning about what fiction really is, not just reading it, I was like, wow. I mean, this would be decades of work to like, well, actually finish that book, which is great.
Which is actually, writing is like the long game. So many, as a young writer too, and I know even young writers now, they're all about like, I need to get published before I'm 25. And I'm like, you don't realize, honey. It's like, do you want something out before you're 25 that you're embarrassed to think about when you're 30? Or do you want to actually write something that you want to write? And just, it's going to come out when it comes out, right?
Yeah. Well, and like, and there's so many, it was the women teaching this fiction revision class were talking about like all the writers who had had their first book come out after like age 45, right? And like so many people, so many famous people that we would never have known, I wouldn't have known at least without these people telling me. And it's inspiring, actually. I'm like, what? It doesn't need to be a certain age, you know?
Not to be a certain age. And we like to talk about this a lot in talking writing about, you don't need to be a certain age or you don't need to be a certain background.
No.
Like, you don't need to do this full time. You don't have to be full time starving artist to be an artist, or like full time gritty writer to be a real writer, right?
I actually think it's like, I have the freedom to write because I have another career. Like, I feel like if writing were my only job, the stakes would be so high. It would be, I would be like, oh my God, I have to publish this right now and I have to get paid for it. And it can't be based on, I read this great literary journal that I love, but they pay $20, you know? And it's like, no, like you have to like pitch and get paid $1,000 for a piece, you know? this being, having a full-blown career that is completely separate from this helps me, because I have a practice. Like, I have, the same way I have a practice as a therapist, right? I have a writing practice too. Now, ever since the, you know, the novel writing happened, I just started every morning for 1 hour. Every morning for 1 hour, it doesn't have to be the same time. Some, you know, sometimes it's 7, sometimes it's 9. If it's nice out, I sit in the backyard. If it's not, I sit, you know, I have a special chair that is very comfy. And if I write, and if I don't have anything to write, I edit. And if I don't have anything to edit, I read about writing. And it's just, it has helped me as a therapist. It has helped me as a person. I feel grounded in that practice. But it's also, I enjoy it. And, you know,
being a writer.
Yeah.
If you write regularly, you know, you have a practice, that is what being a writer is.
Right.
So many things depend upon other things to happen. Like, if you didn't have your own home, if you didn't have a stable career or work that can support you financially, and you can't eat regularly, right? You're not healthy. You know, so many things come into supporting this practice of writing.
Yes.
But you literally cannot be a tortured artist and write.
I don't know how you would. Like, I think it's a luxury. To me, I'm like, wow, like, how grateful am I that I have the thing, the basic things I need to be able to sit and be creative. You know, I work, I don't even know how this happened. I joke with Jason that it's because I married him, but like, for some reason, as a therapist, I've had predominantly creative clients. So like, whether writers, artists, you know, film people, and I've always been, it's always resonated with me that like, when they have been in precarious financial situations and they've talked about, you know, writer's block or not being able to produce anything, I'm like, of course. If you can't support your basic needs, I don't know how you write. I don't know.
Or your
how
your mental health. If your mental health is in the pits, you won't be able to create. And you know, this morning I was talking to the editorial team of Talking Writing, and we said, like, you know, people always romanticize Edgar Allan Poe's alcoholism, but you know, he wrote when he was sober. He didn't write when he was having his benders.
Right.
He can't write when he was having his benders. It's not because he was an alcoholic that he was a good writer. It's he was a good writer when he wasn't an alcoholic, right?
Yeah.
And the same for like other artists, like Michelangelo, he had, when he had benefactors who supported him and he could eat and he had all the luxuries, he could create the Sistine Chapel, in the roof of the Sistine Chapel. He could create his wonderful art. You know, all of these things that are mystified, like, oh, you know, artists and writers are just these touched, blessed individuals who channel all of these things. And I can understand the concept of, like, it feels like you're channeling so many things. But so many conditions, as you said, rely on you to be able to create, right?
Yeah, and I think it's ultimately what I've noticed in the last, you know, couple years of doing this now, is that really it's the pieces that I've worked the hardest on that I have revised over and over and over. I had a great experience where The Inquisitive Eater, which is the New School's literary magazine, published one of my pieces, but it was a back and forth. Like, me and the editor, we were going, I think it must have been 6 rounds of edits. And it's like, you know, and so respectful, so kind, so wonderful, but also like, both of us dug in. Like, they wanted me to change the title, and I absolutely not. Like, I was so attached. But everything else, like throughout the piece, you know, there was very little that I felt like, when they suggested an edit, I could sit back and be like, okay, how is it going to make it stronger? And honestly, I'm more proud of the things that took 10 edits to get to, you know, a place where I was like, wow, like, this is beautiful versus something that I, like, you know, in a drunken rage was like, you know, I'm so mad, I'm going to write this thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's kernels in all your writing of beauty, yep, and that could mm-hmm. become an amazing book or an amazing piece or an amazing story. But I also feel like without the work, without the other eyes, without the help, it isn't going to be your best work. It can't be, you know?
It doesn't exist in a vacuum. Like, just like everything else about being a human being, like, right, creating also doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? So that being said, you know, other aspiring writers out there, or maybe people who are writing but aren't submitting, right? Yeah. I think you are the best person to ask right now that I know personally. Like, how do you get into the habit of, okay, you're working on this, you're doing it, you have a practice, you're doing it right, and you have work. How do you get into the habit of submitting? You know, like, what did that process look like for you?
Well, so the first piece I submitted was just before I took these classes, before I did anything. I actually just Googled. I was like, what do you do when you finish a personal essay? Like, and I found this great website called Chill Subs, and like, it was just a directory basically. And you type in like what, you know, flash nonfiction, let's say. I think the first piece I did was very short. And all these sites came up, and I was like, all right, well, obviously the next thing is I gotta read these things, right? I gotta read, see what these people are publishing, see if it fits. So out of that, right, that was, I don't know, May of 2023, right? And since then, I actually did create, I created a process for myself because I love processes.
It's your occupational hazard right there.
I love a schedule. I love, right? So what I do is I have like two folders, right? And when I feel like something is ready to submit, goes into the to submit folder, right? And this is after minimally like 5 edits, right? And many, many eyes, all the things, right? So it's like, this is my to submit folder. So right now I have, I think, maybe 9 pieces, right? And they have all moved into the submitted folder, which is, right, I really did what I just said, right? I go, well, I use X, Twitter, whatever. And Twitter and Chill Subs and Poets and Writers and authorspublish.com, that's a great one. And I see things that stand out to me. I'm like, oh, that seems like an interesting title, or I love the design of their website, whatever. Read minimally 3 pieces. And if it feels like a good fit, I submit. And I actually do a lot of simultaneous submission. Like, I don't wait. I have waited twice. I submitted something to Modern Love and The Sun was rejected from both, but I'm not done trying. I will try again. But I was like, well, I wouldn't want to simultaneously submit because they were my reach. They were the thing I really, really wanted, right?
You wrote specifically for them, right? So well, yeah, actually, there are pieces like that.
Yeah. It's like one, I just felt was such a good fit for The Sun. Clearly they did not. And another one, yeah, like I actually had written the piece and then someone else in my writing group had said, this seems like kind of a Modern Love. And I was like, okay. And you know, it didn't work out. So now I'm submitting other places. But I think I feel now I have a sense of where I like to submit. But every time they post a new literary magazine that I haven't seen before, I check it out. And I just keep going until it's, you know, published.
It's a wonderful and also frustrating fact about writing that the actual success in it is in the doing, right? Yeah. You just have to do it. Of course, it's good to have tips from you. Okay, Chill Subs. And then maybe right. I look there too. So you do like the resource sharing is very important. Right. But at the end of the day, there's no guarantee that if they go into Chill Subs and did everything that you did, there's no guarantee. But it's in the doing.
Yeah, it's the hard work.
Yeah,
that's the stuff they tell you, where it's like, it's hard work is like usually how successful people are successful. It really feels that way because it's like there have been some pieces. I think I just something that was just accepted that I think is supposed to come out this summer. In a one I really liked. It's called Months to Years, and it's about predominantly grieving, right? And so I had felt so attached to this piece and I'd edited it so many times. And I was like, this thing is never going to get a home. And they were so kind and complimentary. And when they accepted it, I was like, wow. But that's it, is right. If you really believe in the work and you've really done the work, and I mean done the work, like edited it so many times, you're sick of it, then you know you just have to keep subbing.
Yeah, like finding the home for it.
I really think about it that way. And I have had devastating rejections where I'm like, oh, no, I hate this and I don't want to do it anymore. And then the next day I get up and I write and I see, you know, Chill Subs have sent me their newsletter and I'm like, well, okay, maybe it'll fit there. You know, so it's, yeah, I'm devastated for like, you know, sometimes a whole day, but like sometimes only a few minutes. And then I'm like, you believe in this. You've had, you know, 10 eyes on it. Like, you know, you feel like it's done. And if it's, you know what, and if it's not accepted in a year, maybe you won't. Maybe you'll feel like there's more to do. And that's okay too. It's okay to keep revising something, you know?
Yeah, and if you're a writer, this is, you get up and write again, because that's what you want to do for the rest of your life anyway. Like, or yeah, as we like to say here in creative, in talking writing, creative lifer. You're a creative lifer.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. Jason asked me maybe like a couple months ago. He said, what happens when you, what if you get sick of it? What if you don't want to do it anymore? And I was like, I mean, I suppose I'll be like everything else. I just will stop. And he's like, so you think there's going to be one day that you're not going to go down there for an hour or like we're outside for an hour and you're not going to write? And I was like, oh, no, I don't think that. But if it happens, it's OK. You know, I'm like, it's OK. I mean, then I had a nice, really nice period where I was very creative for a while and then moved on to something else. You know, it's OK.
I love that. But for now, Gianna, as a last question, what do you think is the use of writing? And we ask this of everyone who becomes our guest. Like, what's the use of writing for you right now?
Okay. So I think truly, and I'm not just saying this, that since I started this daily practice, I actually feel healthier. Like for me, the use of writing is actually to be grounded, to understand myself better, to understand the stories I've made up about myself better, to come up with new stories, because I'm sick of some of my old stories. And I want, it is, you know, I hate to be the cliche, but it is therapy for me. And I think it's extremely helpful in therapy. Like I now use it a lot more. I tell people to write. I encourage writing. I encourage them to write to me if they feel like they're at a roadblock that can't say it. Write it. We don't have to talk about it. Just write it. Write it for you. And I feel like that some of the pieces I write are for me. I might never want to share them. I might, you know, but they have helped. Everything I've written in the last 2 years has helped me to definitely understand myself better. And I think writing in general helps us to understand each other better.
Well said. And thank you very much for your time today. I'm so glad to finally get you on talking writing and talk about these things. Thank you, Gianna.
Well, thank you so much, Deb. It was really my pleasure. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Writing Podcast. We're an independent literary site and nonprofit organization based in the Boston area, but with contributors from around the world. Since our founding in 2010, we've relied on donations to keep publishing and podcasting. To donate to TW, you can use the donate button on the rss.com page of this podcast or visit talkingwriting.com/donate. And of course, feel free to drop us a line at editor@talkingwriting.com.